The Gospel according to Luke, the 9th chapter. Now about 8 days after these sayings, Jesus took with him Peter and John and James and went up on the mountain to pray. And while he was praying, the appearance of his face changed, and his clothes became dazzling white. Suddenly they saw two men, Moses and Elijah, talking to him. They appeared in glory and were speaking of his departure, which he was about to accomplish at Jerusalem. Now Peter and his companions were weighed down with sleep, but since they had stayed awake, they saw his glory and the two men who stood with him. Just as they were leaving him, Peter said to Jesus, "Master, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah," not knowing what he said. While he was saying this, a cloud came and overshadowed them, and they were terrified as they entered the cloud. Then from the cloud came a voice that said, "This is my son, my chosen. Listen to him." When the voice had spoken, Jesus was found alone, and they kept silent, and in those days told no one any of the things they had seen. I invite you to be seated. It comes as what I might qualify as an occupational hazard that I have a particular appreciation for people who have an ability to communicate in eloquent and powerful ways. Whether it's through written word or spoken word, whether it's a TV show or song or a poem, I find these rhythms, these beats, these lyrics stuck in my head on repeat, just over and over and over. And it's not just an earwig that gets stuck in your head for a day or two and then flitters off into the universe. No, it's more like a mantra, where it just is undergirding everything that I say and do. It's weaving itself in and out of my life, with sometimes without me even being aware of it. And when this happens, this progression that I normally go through is that at some point I start sharing this thing out into the world, and I reference the scene of the show, or I quote the author that I read, and I always feel the need to explain this to the people who I'm sharing it with. And then after doing that for a couple weeks or a couple months, I get to a point where I just put it out in the world. I just speak these words, and then those who understand the reference get it, and those who don't, and I just let that experience happen. And then eventually, I move to the point where I'm not even aware that I'm quoting the show or the movie or whatever. It just becomes so ingrained in my being that I just speak these words and move on, and it is only when someone else says, "Hey, isn't that from such and such?" that I become aware of my own experience. And this, to me, is an element of really great writing, that you have the ability to make these references, these allusions, and not feel the need to explain yourself. You can just put it out into the world and trust that those who have ears to hear will hear it, and that it will take them on a journey wherever they are intended to go. For example, some of you might be sitting here this morning thinking, surely he cannot be serious on whatever it is that he's talking about this morning. To which I would say, I am serious, and don't call me Shirley. Now, some of you know exactly what that is from. And already, you're replaying entire other scenes of that movie in your head, and I've lost you for the rest of the sermon because now you're going over there. But that's okay. Because that's the beauty of making these references and these allusions. They allow you to go where you need to go. Or if I were to say, a rose by any other name. I don't even need to finish the line. You all did it for me. Because we just know this thing. And all of a sudden, we're conjured up images and memories and fears of standing in front of our freshman English class and having to recite these things and feeling weird in our body. And right, we're taken down this path and we don't know where we're going. And I no longer have control over the connections that you are making, but they are exactly the connections that you need to hear this morning. See, I've become increasingly aware as I continue to read and study Scripture that the authors of the Bible were not just good writers. They were great writers. They were excellent storytellers, not in the sense that they could tell incredible tall tales. This is not your grandfather talking about the 8-foot whatever that he caught once upon a time. No, these are stories that captivate our attention, that draw on the illusions and the memories of our past, and give us an opportunity to enter into the story at whatever level we find necessary. Within the New Testament itself, we can just read, gospel after gospel, we can read Paul's letters, we can read Revelation, and be given an incredible story of God's plan for redeeming all of humanity through the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. But planted throughout these scriptures are references back to the stories of their people. Back into the Old Testament, to the Hebrew scriptures, to say, if you understand this, let it take you just a little deeper. Just a little bit further. And suddenly we're making connections that perhaps the gospel authors, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, perhaps they didn't intend, but we trust they are connections that are guided by the Spirit. Take our gospel lesson from Luke this morning, a story that stands on its own as a pretty incredible tale, right? We have Jesus up onto a mountain, there with three of his disciples, and suddenly while he's praying, he becomes this dazzling white. And as if that were not shocking enough, suddenly two guys who have been dead for hundreds of years are standing there talking to him like it's no big deal that they are two guys who have been dead for hundreds of years. And as if that's not enough, suddenly they're in a cloud. Not just a cloud, mind you, a cloud that talks and says to the disciples, "This is my son. Listen to him." Now, on its surface, there is ample opportunity for preaching and teaching. We could read that story and apply it to our lives and faith for years to come. But if we take a moment to read this story as people who've been immersed and taught those Old Testament stories, to think about the ways in which we remember these stories forwards and backwards from our youth, and we can enter into this story in a whole new way. A way that perhaps Luke did not initially intend, but that we trust the Spirit continues to guide. See, when we go back and we think about this story, we hear that Jesus, while he was praying, the appearance of his face changed. Well, that's kind of an odd way to phrase something, the appearance of his face changed. And so we might think to ourselves, well, when else have we heard a story about someone's face changing? And conveniently, those people who arranged our lectionary stories put a story with us to help us with this connection. And so we look back to the story of Exodus and we think about Moses. And we ask ourselves, well, what was the story that Moses was experiencing? Well, it started out that Moses had gone up a mountain. And he'd gone up a mountain to receive the Ten Commandments on 2 stone tablets. And Moses comes back down the mountain. And what does he find? Except all the Israelites worshiping a golden calf. Already breaking the commandments that haven't even been given yet. And so Moses, in his rage, breaks the stone tablets. And God says, all right, let's do this again. Calls Moses back up the mountain. And Moses again gets the stone tablets. And this time, Moses, after standing in the glory of God, comes back down to the people, and we hear the skin of his face shone. So now our minds are primed not just to be thinking about Jesus and the way his appearance changed, but to be thinking about this connection between Jesus and this guy Moses. And we're thinking about this guy Moses, who is the one who brought Israel out of slavery into freedom. And now we're asking ourselves, is this Jesus? Is this the one who's going to bring us out of slavery into freedom? It's just a couple of words. It's not something that Luke even explicitly explains, but it's something that's there for us to uncover just beneath the surface. So the story continues, and Moses puts a veil over his face because the glory of the light of God is too much for the Israelites. And so he wears a veil every time he's in the presence of the people. Now the disciples do not put on a veil, but they do their own form of veiling themselves by just not saying anything. We're just not going to tell anyone what happened. And I think the implication is the same, that they're concerned for what this might mean for those for whom the light of God is too much to bear. What does it mean that we have seen this glory of God? And how do we share that in a way that can be helpful, encouraging, that can be safe for people who see the glory of God as a threat, at least for now? See, if we fast forward a few more years, we get past the story of Jesus on the mountain and we come to this guy, Paul. And Paul starts writing these letters to early churches all over the Mediterranean. And he writes a second letter to the church in Corinth. And there Paul starts to tell us that we are not like Moses. He says, we can act with great boldness, not like Moses. In other words, don't put a veil over your face. Now hold on a minute. Moses got a veil because he had stood in the presence of God. Jesus was on the mountain and became dazzling white because his full nature as God was being revealed to his disciples. Why do we need a veil at all? I haven't stood in the presence of God. I'm definitely not fully God. You can ask anybody that one. That one's pretty obvious. Why would I need a veil at all? And what's changed that now I don't need to wear that veil? The implication is that something has shifted from that time when Jesus was on the mountain and the disciples kept silent to this time when Paul is writing to the first churches. And what's happened is that Jesus was crucified and was resurrected. And for Paul, in the wake of the crucifixion and the resurrection, in this post-resurrection time, the light of God now shines on all those who believe in Jesus Christ, on all those who are trying to follow Jesus. The light shines. And not only that, Paul says that we see the glory of God as though in a mirror. Think about that with me for a minute. If I look in the mirror, I see myself. And so if I look in the mirror and I see the glory of God, I am seeing the glory of God shining from myself. Because in the resurrection, we become people of the light. We become people who embrace and embody that light and shine that light out into the world. People who no longer have to wear a veil, who no longer have to keep silent. Because now it is Jesus himself who pulls back the veil. See, we've been spending a lot of time talking about light over the last several weeks. I'm not sure that I can really emphasize enough the importance of this last aspect that we want to cover, that light clarifies. Think about that word, clarifies, that light brings clarity. Light shines into those corners of our life where things are murky or where things are dark and unseen, where things look like something that they're not. Light clarifies those parts of our lives that we'd rather hide away and no one ever know about. Light clarifies the parts under our couches that are covered with dust bunnies and behind a refrigerator that I swear I'm supposed to clean once a month because that's what my mother told me to, but I've never cleaned in my life. Light clarifies all of those places. Because we are a people of the resurrection. But the people of God have not always been willing to receive that clarifying power. See, the Israelites saw the light of God and saw that it was going to clarify their lives, and they said, no, that's too much. Moses, you put on a veil. We don't want that light to clarify our lives, because when the light is clarifying our lives, we're also seeing the ways in which we are a broken people. We are a people who harm our neighbors. We're a people who divide communities and tear ourselves from one another. We're a people who intentionally or not spend day in and day out causing pain and heartache to our sisters and brothers. And so the Israelites see Moses come down the mountain. They see the glory of God shining from his face, and they say, no, cover that up. We can't stand, we can't bear to have that shining on the brokenness of our lives. And the disciples, I think, have a similar motivation, that they come down from witnessing this incredible transfiguration, this moment when Jesus is revealed to them as God in the flesh. And they say, no, we can't tell anybody about this. It might be too much to reveal our own brokenness. It might be too much to reveal their brokenness. In these days, we have to keep silent. But for Paul, for we who live as a post-Easter people, the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus Christ has changed everything. And so we no longer need to live in fear of what it means to have the light of God clarifying the broken parts of our lives. We no longer need to live in fear of what it means to have the light of God shining through us and clarifying the lives of others, not because we are so righteous and holy that we need not fear judgment, but because it is Jesus Christ himself who pulls back the veil. Because it is Jesus Christ himself who says to us, I already know what the light is going to clarify, and that is exactly why I went to the cross. Because when all that junk, when all that stuff that's hidden in the dark and cornery places of your life, when all that is brought out into the open, then you'll understand. You'll understand why you need me. See, we're about to start another walk through a season of Lent. And this Wednesday we'll gather and we'll get ashes on our forehead and we'll be reminded of our mortality. And if we give ourselves over to this season, by the end of it, we will feel more than just a little exposed by the whole experience. But my hope and my prayer for us, for each of you and for your families, is that we would carry with us this encouragement that it is Jesus Christ himself who pulls back the veil so that we might see again our need for grace, but so that we might look in the mirror and see the glory of God shining back on us. God loves each of you, and I do too.